I'm Kayla.
And I'm Sally, and welcome to another episode of Double Sheelix. Today, we are very excited to welcome our dear friend, scientist extraordinaire, Dr. Raj Kumar, a lecturer in material science and engineering at Stanford University. Welcome, Raj.
Hi, Kayla. Hi, Sally. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
We are very excited to have you as a guest. Today, we're going to talk about graduate school, specifically PhDs. Should you get a PhD? What is a PhD for? What can you do after your PhD? All of these sorts of questions. And Raj is a real expert in this, partly because he has a PhD, but also he's done a lot of work in mentoring students just on this very question. So Raj, let's start off with some of the basics. Let's talk about what is graduate school. Could you tell us some of the logistics, like what it is, what are the benefits, the cost?
So a PhD or a doctoral degree program is an advanced degree that someone gets after they've achieved a bachelor's degree. And the focus of that is to really further, I think, a deeper understanding of your particular field, to try and conduct some research typically on a novel or emerging technology or scientific topic. And it really is, I think, a great way for students to have sort of the expert's view on a particular topic. The logistics of PhDs follows the following format. Typically, folks will apply for most programs in STEM, usually in the fall. They hear about admissions decisions in the spring. And then once you're admitted, it depends on the discipline, but I would say an average time to completion for PhD is usually around 5 to 6 years, but can be longer, can be shorter. Usually the beginning of the PhD sort of looks similar to a master's degree where you're maybe taking more coursework. And then by the end of the first or second year, depending on your program, you're maybe transitioning more into independent research study over coursework. So you're really diving into what your dissertation topic would actually entail.
I should note here that we are talking about American PhDs as opposed to PhDs in other parts of the world, which may have different time scales and different structures. And related to that, a question that I'm often asked is it a good idea to get a master's and then transition into the PhD? In my experience, it's not very common for people to do this. And personally, I think if you're thinking about a PhD, that it's more cost effective to go straight to the PhD rather than doing the master's first. But Raj, I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you might have to do a little bit of your homework to see if the program you're interested or the university you're interested has this policy. Because it turns out at Stanford, we do have some students who go from master's to PhD in our department. But like you said, it isn't necessarily common. It's maybe only one or two students a year out of a master's cohort of maybe 30 or 40. So I completely agree. If you think PhD is in your sights, I think it's worthwhile just to apply to that right away. But if you have some specific reason for doing master's instead, that's okay too. And, you know, maybe you do find out after you start the master's, hey, I think this research thing could be for me and I might want to stick around for a little bit longer. That's okay too. But yeah. I think it's good to know what your options are and what the norms are at the different universities or different programs.
Yeah. And listeners, to be clear, in the American system, you do not need a master's to get into the PhD program.
Can you talk a little bit about the logistics? Like, how much does it cost to get a PhD? Like, did you go into a lot of debt to get this degree? You were in school for a really long time, Rush.
Yeah, good question. So typically, doctoral programs are fully funded for all of their admits. So it's a common misconception that students actually have to pay more money to get a PhD, but for most STEM programs, you're actually paid to be a graduate student, which is really cool. Your tuition is typically covered by the university and specifically by your faculty advisor, and then you're also paid a stipend, a living stipend on top of that. which depending on where you are in the country and what kind of program you are, kind of ranges in value, but typically is somewhere around maybe $30,000 a year. It could be higher depending if you're living in a more expensive locality.
I remember the time when I first found out that your PhD in STEM could be paid, and I was completely shocked. And then I was like, oh, free school? You have me. Yeah.
Kayla loves learning and she loves a good bargain. I think this is in contrast to master's degrees. So in STEM, master's degree, like I know a lot of people who get them, whether it's like the program they have at Stanford in some places where you just stay an extra year at the same place you went to undergrad and get like a master's degree and an undergrad degree in 5 years, or whether you go to a new institution to get a separate master's degree. Now, this is different in Europe. So we're speaking mostly about the US perspective. Tell us more about master's degrees, like how much they cost, are they worth it? And if students are like, well, I don't really know if I want a PhD, so I'm just going to go get a master's first. Like, talk us through that.
Yeah, Sally, that's a really good question. And I think it's a good thing to consider when thinking about graduate school is what is the scope that you're really interested in? What are you trying to get out of your degree? So a master's program is typically much shorter than a doctoral program. Usually completed in 1 to 2 years, depending again on the specific discipline. And the focus there is, I think, much more on the technical training of some specific set of skills or knowledge. So usually it's mainly course-based. You're taking additional classes to get more proficiency in a certain topic. You maybe have some research component, but usually it's fairly minimal. And there potentially could be some sort of master's thesis or written work done. But it's usually much smaller in scope and aimed at kind of getting you more technically proficient in a certain skill set. That being said, I think a master's degree is a really great tool for someone who's definitely set out on going to industry, for example. Folks who really want to kind of take their STEM or engineering knowledge and apply it in a particular company or startup or venture capital firm or whatever, you know, application or whatever career choice you want to make going forward. I think the master's degree can be really beneficial there. As a result though, the master's degrees are typically not funded at most institutions. So oftentimes for those who are considering a master's, you're going to be the one actually paying the tuition to attend, similar to an undergraduate degree. There are options to get funding from the university for doing things like being a teaching assistant or potentially being a research assistant if you're able to find a lab that a faculty advisor would host you in. But compared to doctoral programs, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in a bit, there aren't nearly as many external funding opportunities for master's degrees as there are to PhDs. So this can be one potential burden to overcome when considering master's versus PhD. It is quite a bit shorter, but there maybe are fewer opportunities to have it paid for by someone else.
Yeah, and just to push back on this, I think I can say this because I'm not affiliated with the university, whereas Roz, you're like actually a professor, and Kayla, you're a future professor. I think it's important for undergraduate students considering master's programs, especially in STEM disciplines, to do their research and talk to people outside of academia. So like talk to someone who has a job that you might want and say, how do you guys see master's degrees when you look at your applicants? Like if I get this master's in bioengineering, like would that be a difference than if I just had my undergrad degree? Because to be honest, which is all what I'm all about, as you guys know, I think that some departments, for better or worse, do view the master's program as a way for the department to make money. Because when you pay your undergrad tuition, it goes to the university and they disperse it out with however, I don't even know. And when you're a PhD, your tuition is paid for. But when you're a master's student, a good chunk of that tuition money goes back to the department that they can use to fund what they really care about, frankly, which is undergraduate and PhD education. So I think everyone needs to be a wise consumer of choosing master's programs. And if there's a faculty telling you that you should really apply to this master's program here at the school because it's great, just like understand that everyone has their own motivations when encouraging you to go to a master's program. And do your own research about how do graduates of this program find jobs? And does the market value this degree? Do you guys, I see smiles on this Zoom call.
Yeah, another thing I will add is that it depends so much on your field. For me, coming out of chemistry, it was pretty clear that master's is not much different as a bachelor's degree in terms of what jobs you can get. Whereas a PhD, you can take on like a more leadership research R&D role. If you just have your bachelor's or your master's, then you are going to be doing bench work basically, which is great if that's what you love. But if you want to do those leadership positions, then you almost need to go straight to that.
Yeah, I think in this broader question of figuring out, is grad school the right decision for you? I think being a smart consumer, like you said, Sally, is a great way of putting it. And maybe one question that I would really encourage folks to ask themselves is, what is sort of your career objective? And this is kind of what you were talking about, Kayla, as well. In some disciplines, having, or in some fields of industry or research or whatever it is, having a master's degree can be really beneficial. And if you go and look at those places that you want to work, if most of the people are at the master's level, then that might be a good fit for you. But if most of the people working at these companies or startups or whatever it is are PhD level, then that might be an indicator that those folks are expecting, you know, potential applicants to have a PhD. That's sort of the preferred route. So you kind of maybe want to look a little bit into what fields you want to go into and see, for folks who have that degree, what are the types of responsibilities they have? What is their day-to-day job?
Yeah. And also, like, looking at alumni from the master's program that you're considering and seeing what they're doing now, and not just taking the program's word for it, because they'll put the Kayla of their program on the brochure, okay? But not everyone is a Kayla, you know, going on one job interview, getting your dream job and moving on. You know what I mean? So be an indulgent consumer. But this is not a podcast about Sally's thoughts on master's program. It's a podcast about Raj's thoughts on PhD. So Raj, before we leave and go on to talk about good reasons to consider a PhD, I think there's like a very important reminder that you want to share with the students.
Yeah, so I have to say that when it comes to deciding if grad school is for you, it's pretty important to remember that doing a PhD is completely your choice and your decision. Last I checked, I don't remember any professors of mine, you know, holding me up for ransom saying, you have to get a PhD or else, or something like that. So a PhD is really optional, and you're the only one that knows if it's the right fit for you. We're going to talk about some reasons to consider a PhD, and if some of these things hit close to home or resonate with you, then, you know, maybe it's a good choice. And if they don't, that's okay. You know, there are a lot of interesting career paths that don't require a PhD that I think can be really fulfilling and exciting.
Okay, so reasons to get a PhD. I think we should just list these out, because I think it will also be easier to explain good reasons to get a PhD in light of reasons not to get a PhD. So fire away. What are good reasons to get a PhD?
So I think a PhD could be a good fit for you if conducting research is something that you're really passionate about. So if you have the opportunity to get involved in undergrad with some research opportunities at your home institution or at other external programs, and you walk into the lab and it's just the most exciting thing to you, that you're filled with wonder about all the different projects that are going on, the societal impact that they may have, just the cool technologies and instruments that are there. I know when I first walked into a lab, just seeing all the equipment is really fascinating to me. If some of these things hit home to you, then maybe a PhD is right for you, because you'll actually get the chance and the opportunity to really dive into the research on your own and with others, and get to dive deep.
Can I just comment how genuinely excited you looked when you were talking about this? We can see each other on Zoom while we're recording this podcast. I know that our listeners won't be able to see our faces, but it's just nice to see someone who's out of a PhD still expressing that excitement over equipment and research.
So maybe it's due to the fact that unlike you, Kayla, I'm not currently doing research on a daily basis. So I can have fond memories because I'm not in the trenches, so to speak.
You haven't had a failed experiment in months.
It's been at least a year and a half at this point, so it's been a long time. My lens is definitely filtered green.
Raj, do you want to talk about like your personal reasons for getting a PhD? Like, obviously you love research and now you're in a professor-like lecture role. Was this your goal from the beginning? Can you walk us through like your, you know, a 20 whatever year old undergrad being like, I'm applying to grad school, and then like getting in, and then like, you can blur over the middle part if you want, but then also leaving.
Sure. Yeah, I can talk a little bit of my own personal experience. So I know I just talked about the love of research, but I have to say, I think maybe my path was a little bit less traditional in that when I was thinking about doing a PhD, I actually wasn't that thrilled with the research part, which maybe is kind of surprising or funny to hear. For me, I was really interested in getting to work with other people motivated in science and engineering. I was really interested in being in that academic setting where folks are interested in just learning more about some topic or discovering new things. And so for me, I was really drawn to, I think, just staying in school. So I think, Sally, I know you joked that extra school on a discount. Yeah, that's a great tagline. But for me, that was kind of true, I would say. I kind of just wasn't ready to leave college or university setting. I have to say that, for my undergrad research experiences, I think this is a common thing for a lot of students. I didn't really know what doing research in grad school was going to be like. I didn't know the demands or the rigors or the struggles or, you know, dealing with things that go wrong. I don't think that even though I had some undergrad research experience, I wasn't really the one driving the work. I wasn't put in that situation to really understand what it would be like. So maybe I decided to go to a PhD or do a PhD for slightly more selfish or personal reasons that I knew I just really liked teaching and I really liked working with students and getting to mentor students. So that seemed like the path to go, but it was something that I was definitely excited about.
I appreciate that you were interested in research or interested in teaching throughout the whole process.
Yeah. And a little inside baseball, we knew we wanted to have Raj on the podcast because he's amazing. And we talked about what topics he could talk about. And one that we might have him back in the future to talk about because it's too juicy, I think, to let go. But it's like how to be a good TA. Because Raj was a TA many times. And he now, I assume.
A great TA.
Yeah. He now like manages TAs. So like, anyway, Kayla, do you want to share your personal reasons if they differ at all?
Well, besides, you know, free school. I'm only a little bit kidding. Yeah, for me, it was sort of putting a name to what I wanted to do. I really did want to do research. I genuinely have always enjoyed that kind of thing. And I just didn't know that you could do that and like have a job doing that until college. And when I found out that you could, it seemed pretty obvious to me that graduate school was the means to the end to do research as a career. Sally?
Oh, mine is just, I mean, I think I talked about this on our first ever episode of Double Felix about first jobs. Mine is just that I had three internships, the three summer of undergrad, academia, industry, government. In all three, I was like, this is really fun. I could do this for a summer. I could do this for a year. But the person whose job I could do for my whole life is that person, whether that was the PI, the office director, or the like plant supervisor. And those people all had PhDs. And I was like, well, obviously that's what I need to get to go to what I want to do next.
A couple of the things that I think are worth mentioning, because maybe it sounds like I didn't actually like the research that much. And I did. It's maybe more that I learned to love it along the way, but maybe that wasn't my primary motivation for joining.
That is not a unique feeling in my experience of talking to people.
Right.
Getting a PhD for the job possibilities is still a good reason, even if the research is not your first motivator.
Yeah, you just have to love research enough to do it for 5.5 years. You don't really have to love bench work enough to do it for your whole life.
Exactly. Yeah. So something that I've heard from other students that I think was true for me is I somewhat wanted to get a PhD to kind of keep my options open after I graduated. Because I felt like if I just went into a job right after undergrad, you know, maybe I wouldn't really get to have as much pull on the decisions that I was making on a day-to-day basis. I might be more working for someone else, kind of without much say in the direction of the work. So while I wasn't totally convinced that I wanted to do research for the rest of my life, I was open, kind of just like you said, Sally, to doing it for a little over 5 years to see, to just to learn more about what options there were going forward. And it was great because when I was in grad school, I felt like I was really able to broaden my perspective by learning from so many folks with different technical backgrounds or technical interests. So I got to work with, while I'm a material science and engineer person myself, I got to interact with bioengineers, electrical engineers, chemical engineers, civil engineers, mechanical engineers, and folks that were just working on really cool problems in all different disciplines. And it was fun to just learn more about how that could be applied to industrial applications, to research applications, to like real societal problems that I never learned about in undergrad. And if I just went to go work for a company right out of undergrad, I may not have ever been able to see all these things that are these emerging technologies or emerging research areas.
I think some of these reasons that we're getting into now that you're mentioning, like the fear of missing out on other opportunities and like you just wanting to be a student forever. So when I'm looking at this episode outline, we have these listed under bad reasons to consider a PhD. So can you talk about like how you know if you're getting a PhD because it's truly what you want, or if you're just falling into the curse of our generation, i.e. FOMO, i.e. the fear of missing out? It's like, we're like, well, if I don't get a PhD, then I definitely can't do that. So I have to get it just in case I might want it. Like, how do you know?
Can I say something on that note?
Please.
We can jump back to this. But I think when we wrote that, at least maybe, I don't remember which of us wrote that, but when I was thinking about that, I was thinking of cases where you see students who are used to being high achievers and the logic is like to be continue being a high achiever, I have to achieve more schooling as opposed to like keeping your career options open. I don't know. Maybe Raj, if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, no, I think this is a really important topic because having actually sat on our Stanford admissions committee this last year, I think I can see some differences between these kinds of students. Where if you're someone that I think like we're talking about just really enjoys tackling academic problems or like academic research or likes learning, then I think grad school can still be a really good fit for you, even if you're not quite sure what you want to do yet. Because as a 21-year-old or 22-year-old or even a 30-year-old or a 35-year-old, doesn't matter, you probably don't have your entire life planned out just yet. So if you don't know what research, you don't know what problems you're interested in tackling, that's okay. On the flip side, if you're used to being this like high achiever that you're mentioning, giving this example, and you feel like your motivation to go to grad school is just to maybe appease your family or to keep up with societal pressures or to appear like you're being successful, but you don't actually like being in school that much, then it's probably not a good fit for you. And there may be some other thing that you're really passionate about, whether it's, you know, starting a nonprofit, whether it's going into investment banking, whether it's joining an engineering startup to work on batteries. It doesn't really matter what you do next. If you know that in deep down, you'd be happier maybe just applying yourself in a different way that's not in school. So I think for folks, it's more of a question on, am I really excited about kind of solving abstract problems and more academic problems, or do I want to get more focused attention in some setting outside of the university setting?
I think another thing that I see with students who might fit into the category of being high achievers and feeling like if they don't go to some kind of professional school or graduate school that they're not achieving enough, I think the challenge is that they feel like they can't have an impact that way, or that they're letting themselves down I'm glad that you mentioned societal or family pressures. I've definitely seen that from students, like, oh, well, you know, all of my family has their PhD, so I obviously can't be the only one that doesn't have one. But I think that misses a really great opportunity to see the impact of other careers. I mean, honestly, like, when you're in graduate school and you're, especially in the life sciences, you're pipetting for six of your however many hours a day working, it does not feel impactful.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had the pleasure of getting to chat with some of our alumni through alumni panels who have gone into industry with their bachelor's degree, and they get to work on really exciting problems. So a couple come to mind where they're at places like SpaceX or Boeing or some of these smart energy grid companies that are rethinking about how to distribute power to different communities and different businesses. With a bachelor's education, you certainly can make a pretty significant impact. You maybe don't have as much training as in an academic sense that as you would if you got a PhD, but oftentimes some of that training happens when you're in your career, when you're working at the job, where you learn things on the fly. So I think there's plenty of impact to be had, even if you don't get a PhD. Probably, like you were saying, all jobs have some amount of menial work that, you know, just isn't that fun. But I think the best positions to be in is when you really love what you're doing and you don't mind doing the pipetting for 6 hours a day.
Totally. So we covered in terms of the bad reasons to get a PhD, like because of societal pressure, because you internal pressure to be, you know, the number one most credentialed success star that you've been since age 7 or whatever. And that, like, I think another really common one is being unaware of other options. So I just talked about bad reasons to do a PhD. Here are things that should not prevent you from getting a PhD. Like, if you worry that it's too expensive, if you worry that you're not good enough, if you worry that it'll take too long, yes, those reasons are valid and they might weigh into your final decision. But if you're really motivated to do a PhD, don't let the fact that it takes a long time or that it's expensive stop you. But caveat to that is, like, it does take a long time and you are, even though you do get a stipend of between $30,000 to $40,000 a year, you are paying with your time, and that's time that you're not spending earning money in a real job that would pay more than $30,000 to $40,000 a year in STEM. You know, don't let feelings of self-doubt get in the way.
Can I add to that? It's just like feeling like you're incompetent. I think that it's better to let the admissions committee decide if they are ready to take you on in their program before you just rule yourself out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we mentioned earlier about the societal or family pressure. It can feel like if you have family members that have gone into higher education and gotten a PhD, that there's the pressure there. On the flip side, I've known many students who they were the first in their family just to attend college and get a bachelor's degree, let alone a PhD. And they maybe came from communities where they didn't know anyone who had a master's degree or a PhD. And I find that can be a pretty significant barrier. And I would hope that if you are really passionate about research or about, you know, being in school, about kind of solving these kinds of academic problems, that even if you don't know someone who's gone through it, it is worth your while to try it, to try doing a PhD and to see where that takes you. Because your success will really only go as far as willing to take it. It can definitely be scary trying something new that you don't really, you know, have much familiarity with. But I am at least excited to say that at places like Stanford, at places like Berkeley, these kind of top tier institutions, I think there is a lot more attention being paid to the graduate experience of everyone, and not just the graduate experience of those who were well positioned to go to grad school. And that some of the voices of folks who maybe are underrepresented in STEM or are underrepresented in PhD programs are starting to come out. And I think there are more resources available for those folks to help them, to show them the way to what it's like to be a graduate student. Because I think that's a tricky transition for anyone, but it's especially tricky for those who don't have a reference point.
I'm very glad that you brought this up, because I can personally relate to a lot of what you said. And that is definitely one of our passions in this podcast, is to talk about the tools that you need to understand how this kind of process works, especially if you don't have that reference point. And we have referred to it in past episodes as hidden curriculum. And we've talked a lot about how mentorship can be a big part of that. But just as a general note, there are a lot of resources out there. It is more work to find them if you don't have that reference point. But if it's something that you're interested in, like, it's worth pursuing.
Going back to the good reasons to consider a PhD, I think there is one story that I want to share. So I very distinctly remember my graduate research advisor at a group meeting of ours, where all the students in the group were, you know, convened to chat about what's going on in our research, kind of put our PhDs in perspective to us a little bit, which I thought was really impactful. And the idea was that getting to work on cutting edge problems in a PhD is one of the most challenging, but one of, in some ways, the most low risk way to get to work on these types of problems. Because if I was doing the research I was doing at a startup, for example, or at an industry company or something like that, there would be pressures from my bosses or pressures from funding agencies or deadlines that are just much faster paced than you see in grad school. Whereas as a graduate student, I get to fail a lot. And it's actually rewarding, because then I get to really aim high in terms of what kinds of problems that we get to work on. And if I fail, my graduate or my research advisor isn't mad about it. My research advisor would ask me, okay, well, why did you fail? What went wrong? Let's explore that further. And let's actually figure out why something didn't work, rather than just moving on to the next attempt at trying to figure out how it would work. So I thought that was actually kind of rewarding, because grad school, I think, at sometimes can feel really stressful, but it was a great way to sort of reframe things in a way that made it feel more empowering, that I could try really hard problems or tackle hard questions. And if I failed, that was okay.
That's so great. I think we're going to have to frame this episode as reasons to go to grad school, or reminisce on why you decided to go. Okay, so as you're making this decision, Sally, you kind of alluded to this, that there's a lot of life that happens while you're in graduate school. What other life factors should people be considering when they're thinking about a potentially 6-year graduate program?
Okay, yeah. So life happens when you are in graduate school. If you want to hear a 1-hour-long conversation about this, please refer to our previous episode, all about graduate, or it's called PhD Reflections. And we talk about, like, 6 years is a long time. Like, if you think about your life 6 years ago, it's very different than now. And that's how it is in graduate school. Just because you're in graduate school doesn't mean that the pause button is pushed on everything else, including family, including friends, including some people graduate and then they're a parent by the time they get out, or they've gotten divorced, or they've gotten married. So, like, life happens. And I think it's important to consider that strongly. Like, if it's very important to you to be close to your family of origin, then you shouldn't feel shy about only applying to places close to them. You know, if it's very important to you, like, to stay with your current partner and not be in a long distance relationship, like, that's a big, tough question. All programs should know and acknowledge and treat you like a human being and human person with needs and desires outside of the lab. And if you're not seeing that, then that's not a program for you, or a faculty or an advisor for you.
I guess I want to add that I think when people ask this question of, will I have work-life balance in graduate school, what they're really asking is, am I going to be absolutely miserable because I'm working 70 to 100 hours a week, every single week? In my experience, the answer is you will not be miserable for those reasons, at least most of the time. There are obviously lots of challenging parts about graduate school, and there are challenging parts about existing. The challenging parts of existing are going to happen anyway, and if you can, you know, alleviate some of that stress by some of the things, Sally, you were mentioning, of like thinking about what's important to you and thinking about like where are you okay being geographically, for example, for 6 years, that's really helpful in advance. But also, I would not stress out, I would not let that be a reason to stop you from going to graduate school. Like you can live and do research at the same time. It doesn't have to be all consuming of all of your waking hours and then some.
And I would say if you're getting the vibe that it is all consuming of your waking hours and then some, then that's a toxic environment. And you know that I'm all about being against toxic mentorship. So moving on to other factors to consider, life happens. We talked about that. Your advisor is really important. We talked about that. I think a lot of times when people are considering graduate school, they don't think about like what the alternative would be. You know, it's either like grad school or I don't know, you know, because they only know professors because they're at a university. So Raj, do you have any experience counseling students when they're thinking about like, oh, I could do a gap year and then do a PhD if I still want to? Because that's a pretty common approach.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think it's okay to delay your application to grad school. For some people, it's the right fit to do it right after they finish their bachelor's. But for many, that's not the right time to go. Especially now, I think during the pandemic, I've talked to a lot of students who feel like they haven't gotten enough exposure to what research is really like to commit to doing a PhD where you're expected to do research for, you know, 5 or 6 years. So one thing that I've advised students, or I've heard from students, that's a good option is to take a year to do research full time before you actually start a PhD program. This can be an option to figure out if it's something that you're passionate about, if you would really think it's a good fit. It can give you more experience and actually give you a leg up in your application process to show that you know what the process of doing research is really like. And it can also give you a little bit of a break of sometimes I think undergraduates especially are trying to balance too many things on their plate at once, where they're doing pretty intensive schoolwork and research and extracurricular activities and second jobs and whatever else. So taking a year to just focus on one task, and if that's doing research for a gap year, they get to focus in on that a little bit more. Gap years could also be doing other things like getting a full-time job at a particular company or startup or, you know, something related to your field. And that's also invaluable experience, because part of being a good PhD student is learning kind of those basic work skills of how to, you know, achieve deadlines, how to present your work, how to communicate effectively with others. And getting a job right after a bachelor's degree, you have to learn a lot of those skills as well. So that can also make you very attractive later on as a PhD applicant.
Can I add that getting that experience, especially if you haven't had much undergrad research experience, is really valuable if you do decide to apply. It's not like the admissions committee is going to look at your application and say, oh, well, you've been out of school for 2 years. It's instead a benefit because you've gotten some of that research experience, and people want to know that you know what that is like before you commit to 6 years of it.
I love that. Okay, here's a question that some of our listeners might be screaming. What if I won a PhD and I did my application, but then I didn't get in?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Maybe one thing I would say is it's always good to have some backup plans and give yourself options. So I think it can be easy to get married to one idea too quickly and think like PhD is the only route for me. But just like we've said, you know, doing some other opportunities, you're likely learning a lot of the same skills. So if you look at other job opportunities, internship opportunities, you know, even working for non-traditional employers. So going to work at a nonprofit, going to volunteer at a hospital, these might sound scary in that, oh, well, if I try to apply again later, the committee's not going to see that experience very favorably. But if you can demonstrate that you took some tangible skills away from that, you learned how to work with other people, you learned how to communicate effectively, you learned how to prioritize, you know, certain tasks and get things done, those that can happen in so many different experiences or you know, opportunities. So I don't think you have to be so narrow and say, well, I have to do research or I have to do this job. You can get a lot of good experience in a variety of different places.
Yeah, and then to that, I would just add, if you're in that position, one thing I would say is it's okay to mourn and be sad because that sucks and it was something that you really wanted and it didn't happen this time around. So just like get that chocolate ice cream, get that spoon, make it happen for yourself. The second thing I would say is it's not just about like identifying that other options are out there, like Rush says, but I would suggest like really also leaning in and finding something else to get excited about. Whether that's like looking on LinkedIn and seeing who has a cool job and then talking to that person, doing the same things that you did in your preparation for being excited about PhD, but for other things. And I think if you can find other opportunities that you could be see yourself getting excited about, like that's a very important step to bridge between the sadness of not getting in to like actually applying to other opportunities. And then the third thing, if you know that you want to reapply to grad school in the future, honest mentorship. So reach out and find if there's a faculty or an amazing like graduate student or postdoc whose feedback that you really trust and see if they're willing to walk through your application materials and tell it to you like it is. And this might be harsh, but also I think like we talked in our episode about preparing about having mentees, right? Like when you go to a poster fair, it's very clear who's and when you go to an undergrad poster fair, it's very clear whose graduate student mentor did not tell them how to make a poster because there's a secret formula of how to make a poster and everyone's looks the same. And if yours looks different, you feel really shitty about it, but it isn't your fault. It's your mentor's fault for not helping you. It's the same thing for grad school applications. And both Kayla and Raj have been on the committee. So you know that you can tell like which students didn't have help and didn't have support in formatting their experiences and their application packet in the way that it's typically done, but that no one tells you how it's typically done.
Either so you that need to or make... they didn't listen.
So like get honest mentorship and see if someone will tell it to you like it is. And their answer might be, wow, it must be luck of the draw. Their answer might be, you don't have enough research experience. Your answer might be, with this GPA, I really think you should consider these other schools instead. But make sure that you get excited about other options before you get that honest mentorship and then be crushed again if they have harsh things to say.
Somebody asked me to where they could find these kind of mentors. And also, if you're taking a gap year and you're working at some kind of job, mentors could be anybody who has gotten a PhD that works at your company or works at companies related to what you're doing. There's a lot of options. It's a little bit weird to kind of cold ask, but you know, if you ask around, you can usually find somebody.
And trust your gut on who to listen and who to ignore, because not everyone gives good advice.
It is a fine art to figure out what advice to consider.
One thing I would want to say, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay if you don't get into grad school the first time. Which I will say is, I think, really rare. You're probably going to get in somewhere. You've done your homework and you've applied. I don't think I know anyone personally that they gave their honest effort to apply and they got in nowhere. I know a few.
I do know some acquaintances that this has happened to. And I think it's because they were guided by bad mentorship. Like, when I was applying, I went to my PI, she's amazing, and I was like, here's the places I'm applying. Am I going to get in or no? Like, do I need to adjust my caliber? And she's like, you're definitely not going to get into all these places, but I think you'll get into more than one.
Right.
You know, and I think sometimes people, like, not to get into toxic mentors, but toxic mentors steer their undergrads astray. I've seen this so many times where the toxic mentor is like, Kayla, okay, my friend Hover over at Harvard. Well, you're at Harvard now, so I don't feel bad using that as an example. My friend over at Harvard, he has a really great lab, and he'll definitely let you in with a recommendation from me. So I don't really think you need to apply to that many places because my good friend, he's my bud, he's going to get you in. And then you only apply to Harvard and like one other place, and then you don't get in because, of course, like your toxic mentor was just bullshitting you. or like didn't write you a good recommendation. Like, I know students that this happened to. And then they're like, well, my PI said, I'm like, oh, how's your grad school? And he's like, oh, my PI said that he's emailing his friend who can probably get me in off the wait list. But it's like, dude, your PI is just lying to you because he wants you to stay around another year and be an RA in his lab working for half the price of a graduate student and not having to train a new person. So make sure you're getting advice from a lot of people about which schools to apply to, because you are not guaranteed admission at a place because your faculty, your PI has a friend there. Okay, this is why we have equitable admissions, because faculty shouldn't just be able to admit their best friend's favorite student. And this does happen, but it sucks and it should not be allowed to happen.
I really liked when you said earlier that maybe this is a podcast about is PhD the right fit for you, but also just what were some good memories we had about PhD. And I think that's actually important because from the students that I've talked to, a lot of them just, it's just a mystery. Like, what is a PhD? What does it actually mean to do a PhD? So I think sharing that personal experience, those personal stories are really great. And I think all three of us have shared a lot of useful stuff already in the last hour, which I think is great. I think one of, just like, yeah, the last thing I'll say is, I think one of my favorite parts about doing the PhD wasn't really the specific research I did. Like, it was really cool getting to work on batteries and these kinds of things. But I think what I really loved is I got to talk to so many people about my project and about their work that was somewhat related. And it wasn't just professors. It was other graduate students who were in all different disciplines, so chemical engineering, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, et cetera. I got to work with some really talented undergrads too, who just saw things much differently than me. And I was really fortunate to get to mentor some undergrads. And I know this sounds corny, but I totally learned as much from them as they probably learned from me. Maybe that's because I didn't teach them that much, but no, it's because they were really talented and really excited to be in the lab. So I think if you're if doing undergrad was just really exciting to you, like you went through your courses, you thought it was fun, you like enjoyed learning these things, I think grad school could be a really good fit for you because you're just surrounded by people that really enjoy learning new stuff, tackling new problems, and seeing where the world takes you and what kind of big picture problems we can try to tackle and accomplish. And I think that's, there's a real excitement to being in grad school that on the day-to-day basis, when you're pipetting over the bench, can seem really far away. But when you step back for a second and you realize, wow, there's just a lot of really intelligent driven people here. That's really fun. And that could be a good reason.
That's so beautiful. Oh, Raj, thank you so much. Well, Kayla and I have already shared our PhD highlights in our past episode, PhD Reflections. You can hear like 75 minutes of that. So I think it's time for shameless plug time. Raj, is there anything that you want to plug? Like, should people apply to go to Stanford to be your student? Or like yourself on social media, or like if you have a favorite pandemic, a new pandemic hobby, or like a favorite lipstick or fitness instructor that you want to share. These are just things that past guests have talked about in this time. So any plugs?
I'll say first, for any listeners who are interested in grad school in general, would be happy to chat if Sally and Kayla could maybe send my contact information out somewhere to follow up. If it's just questions about what it's like to be in grad school or specific questions about what it's like to be a graduate student at places like Stanford or Berkeley or Northwestern or something like that, I'm happy to share. Shameless plug. So I think since moving to California, I've been turning into a hippie slowly but surely. And I think my palate is changing a little bit, where the last month and a half or so, I've been mostly eating vegetarian and trying new dishes and things and trying to cook mostly at home, and that's been really fun. So there's this grocery store called Berkeley Bowl that I'm sure Sally and Kayla and I could talk about for hours and hours. So my shameless plug is that they have a really nice cookbook that's completely vegetarian, and some things are vegan. And my wife, Christina, and I really like trying new recipes from that book. So I would highly recommend.
I bought this cookbook on your recommendation like 2 years ago, and it is great. Question, have you been to Berkeley Bowl in the pandemic? I haven't been yet because I'm afraid of it being like swamped with fans.
I have.
/ shoppers. How is it?
I was there just a little over a week ago, actually. And it was in fact a nightmare, as you might predict, but not because of the fans. It's actually, here's the grind my gears section of the podcast. Too many Instacart shoppers, let me tell you. Just all over the place and only looking at their phones and, you know, not really paying attention to the other shoppers around. So that made the trip stressful. So I would maybe recommend for those living in the Bay Area or Berkeley, don't go right when they open, because that's when I went. And I guess that's when all the Instacart people start their day of work. So
yes.
Go like an hour after they open or something.
I mean, even during not the pandemic, this grocery store, like, is like mobbed like at all times. It's very popular and like it has some stuff that's inexpensive. But yeah, solidarity with the gig workers being exploited by California's new labor laws.
Yeah.
That
I guess
sucks.
My message would be go to the grocery store yourself every once in a while. I know it's the pandemic and maybe that's not the best thing to say, but to your apartment.
Yeah.
Get your own groceries.
My grocery time is like 9 p.m. It's very empty, but sometimes Sprouts is sold out because they only restock. Well, okay, we can't just have like a grocery store gripe section.
Hidden gem, go to Grocery Outlet in Oakland
grocery
or Richmond
outlet
or some of those
by
locations.
The market.
That's actually my favorite grocery store. And I go there probably every 3 days, probably too often.
Kayla, do you miss Grocery Outlet Bargain Market?
Yes. Also, this is going to be one of my top new favorite shameless plug times.
Like, what's the best grocery store?
Yeah. Well,
whichever one that sells persimmons, I think, is Kayla's favorite.
you know so well. I have a weakness. Well, Raj, thank you so much for being here, for sharing all of your wisdom. I'm sure that listeners will really appreciate this episode. As we said, whether you are thinking about going to get a PhD or whether you are in the middle of it and wondering how you got there.
Yeah, and if I think this is another episode that is a great resource, so highly recommend. If you like have students coming to you with these questions because you're a faculty, just like link them to this episode and save yourself an hour of time. Yeah. Well, no, then have them come back to you and ask their even more detailed and specific questions. That would be a even level up use of everyone's time.
Yeah. And then
listen to the podcast first and then bring your questions to your mentor that's nearby.
That's why we made this podcast, because we were so tired of having the same conversation 12 times about how to pass quals. So we made our quals episode, and now people should listen to that. Shameless plug for the quals episode. All right. Well,
yeah. Well, I have to say thank you guys so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed getting to chat with you, and I have to say I'm really happy that a podcast like this exists, where people can just hear more about what it's like to be in grad school or what it's like to be in STEM. And I think it's a really great way to just open up the conversation to more people. So I'm really happy to be a part of it.
Oh, thanks, Raj. We're really happy to have you. And thanks, listeners. And we'll talk soon.